This is the Daily Update for Thursday, March 8, 2018. Job creation saw another powerful month in February, with companies adding 235,000 positions, ADP and Moody's Analytics reported on Wednesday. The total again defied Wall Street expectations, as economists surveyed by Thomson Reuters were expecting payrolls to grow by 195,000. February marked the fourth month in a row that private payrolls hit 200,000 or better. The job market is red hot and threatens to overheat, Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's, said in a statement. With government spending increases and tax cuts, growth is set to accelerate. February saw broad-based gains that stretched across both the services and goods-producing sectors. Leisure and hospitality led industry groups with 50,000 jobs, while professional and business services contributed 46,000, and trade, transportation, and utilities added 44,000. Monthly jobs reports continue to defy expectations that payroll growth is bound to slow, as the unemployment rate, currently at 4.1%, nears the level that economists generally consider full employment. So what does that mean? That means people are getting back to work. If they deem 4.1% full employment, we're basically at full employment. So you got to think that the powers that be and this administration know what they're doing, to the point where job creation is easy for them. And these jobs are coming back to America and also being created in America. And that's good for Americans. So an Internal Revenue Service agent who was allowed to remain on the job for months despite allegations of sexually assaulting a summer intern was charged Wednesday with raping and strangling the woman in his government-issued car. James R. Clark, an agent in the IRS's Criminal Investigations Office in Boston, allegedly handcuffed and assaulted the 21-year-old student at gunpoint in July, according to the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office. Indictments charged Clark with aggravated rape, strangulation, indecent assault and battery, and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. He was not arrested, but was ordered to appear in Suffolk Superior Court for arraignment on April 5th. Can you imagine that this guy's charged with aggravated rape, strangulation, indecent assault and battery, and assault and battery, and assault with a dangerous weapon, no kidnapping charges, which is very interesting, and he's allowed to walk free. He's allowed to walk free. Now, any other regular old person out there would be sitting in jail waiting for their arraignment, but this guy can walk free, and he sounds like a dangerous person, right? So Clark has continued to work for the federal agency since the woman called 911 and accused him of placing a gun in her mouth and assaulting her, according to a person with knowledge of his work status. The IRS declined to comment Wednesday on whether Clark has been placed on leave since the indictment, so they won't even admit that he's placed on leave and he's probably still working for them. The Boston Globe first reported the allegation assault in November, noting that Clark had not been arrested and was allowed to continue working at the IRS despite the ongoing investigation. The young woman, who was not identified in the documents, worked for the IRS as an unpaid intern and investigative analyst, assisting agents working on criminal investigations. So I don't even know where to start with this. An unpaid intern having access to sensitive documents of criminal investigations, a guy who puts a gun in her mouth and rapes her and handcuffs her, who is still allowed to work. All of this stuff is just unbelievable. And it's almost like someone's making it up as we're going along. And the worst possible things you could think of, let's make it up as you go along. So the IRS, the FBI, all these government agencies are falling apart, absolutely falling apart. And they're not being held accountable to the same level of justice that you and I would be held accountable in this country if we had committed these same crimes. So, wow, something needs to be done about all of this now. So, a child pornography case against a California doctor has revealed that Best Buy Geek Squad technicians have worked with the FBI to uncover data on customers' computers for years. One nonprofit is now saying that the nature of the FBI's relationship with the techs may have violated the U.S. Constitution. Digital rights nonprofit Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit last year after it was discovered that the FBI allegedly paid Geek Squad employees to go through their clients' computers while they're being repaired. So imagine that. Here you have a computer, you're giving it to the Geek Squad to fix. They're searching your computer, not fixing it necessarily, but searching it first and foremost, looking for anything they can that they can turn you in on. And that violates the Fourth Amendment. One such search led to felony child porn charges against Dr. Mark Rettenmeier after a technician reportedly went through the oncologist's deleted files and called the FBI in 2011. In 2017, a judge ruled that the images found in Dr. Rettenmeier's computer could not be considered child porn and the invasive search was illegal. So now, 2011 to 2017, you have 6 years that this doctor who has been charged with child porn, his career destroyed, his personal relationships destroyed, and all of a sudden they're saying, well, that's not child porn, you can't charge him for that. But they did charge him, and his life was destroyed. And now people are still looking at him raising eyebrows because child porn is very serious stuff. And there's a lot of it on the internet. But also, if you want to frame people up, what's to stop someone as a jealous ex-wife or whatever to put something in your computer and then float it to the police as forensic evidence? So think about that when you think about all of this new information coming out and what authorities are using to charge people. So this guy's life turned into dog poop. All the charges were dropped and the case was dismissed after Judge Cormac Carney said the FBI agent made false and misleading statements to obtain a search warrant for the doctor's house. EFF said their FOIA request discovered that Geek Squad parent company Best Buy has been working with the FBI for at least 10 years. A memo acquired in the lawsuit shows that Best Buy hosted a meeting and tour of their Kentucky repair facility for the FBI's cyber working group in 2008. The memo also admitted that the agents maintained close liaisons with the Geek Squad's management in an effort to glean case initiations and to support the division's computer intrusion and cyber crime programs. Other court records uncovered in the FOIA search found that Geek Squad technicians were paid between $500 and $1,000 to actively search a client's computer. Like the ruling in Dr. Rettenmeier's case, the reports have raised concerns that the FBI is using the Geek Squad to bypass the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. And they're paying people. So here's an incentive to go inside someone's computer and maybe find something. And in this guy's case, it wasn't deemed child pornography. So amazing. And I know somebody who got harangued on Facebook for putting a picture of their kid up who's in the bathtub and people saying it was child pornography. And they got into big trouble and people called authorities on it. A kid sitting in a bathtub. How crazy is that? And let's keep in mind, a Best Buy spokesperson denied the claims in 2017, a year ago. Jeff Shellman said that their techs don't do anything other than what is necessary to solve the customer's problem. But we all know that that's a lie. You think about this when it comes to your privacy. Yeah, we need to catch criminals. We need to put criminals in jail, especially for things like child pornography. But we need to use due process and the justice system first and pay attention to the U.S. Constitution because it's what we have. So with all that, let's celebrate the day today. Today is International Women's Day. So happy International Women's Day to all the women out there who are celebrating International Women's Day. Women's Day was first celebrated on February 28, 1909 in New York. 2 years later, German socialist Louise Zietz proposed that the holiday become an annually observed one that would celebrate various women's issues, such as suffrage, so as to promote equal rights for women. The first few women's days were celebrated in a quite different fashion than they are nowadays, with hundreds of demonstrations taking place in Europe. These days, women just go to the spa, have a good time, get a little pampered, get a little treated, go to a nice restaurant, whatever, meet your friends for drinks and coffee, much different. But back in the day, during these demonstrations, demonstrations, women demanded they finally be given both right to vote and to hold public office. Employment sex discrimination was also an important issue. Imagine, 100 years later, and you got the Harvey Weinsteins out there. You've got these people, men and women, who sexually exploit people in the workplace. So in 1917, the Women's Day demonstrations in St. Petersburg, Russia, helped initiate the February Revolution when women marched through the city demanding an end to World War I. This shocked even Leon Trotsky, who, much like other Russian leaders of the day, did not expect Women's Day protests to cause that much of a stir. Until 1977, Women's Day was celebrated mainly in socialist countries. It was only after the United Nations General Assembly's decision to proclaim March 8th International Women's Day that the holiday gained worldwide popularity. So, let's think about women today and all they had to suffer through and are still suffering through in many ways on International Women's Day. Today is also a proofreading day. In 2011, Judy Beaver created Proofreading Day in remembrance of her mother, Flo. On her website, nationalproofreadingday.com, Judy relates that her mother loved to correct people. She thought by creating this day on her mother's birthday, it would be a fun way to remember her and help people take more time to proofread their work. Miss Beaver has filled her website with links to many resources that relate to proofreading, but also for grammar as well. It is important to remember that when we write, we should use the rules of grammar instead of just typing as if we are speaking. Professionals in all fields can set a bar of good writing by remembering this fact. So check out the website and proofread your work, for God's sakes. And you have to proofread it a couple of times. Technically speaking, 2 to 3 times, because it's so easy to miss mistakes in your writing, right? Today is also Peanut Cluster Day. So chocolate has been in recorded culinary history dating as far back as 1900 BC. It was usually used to make a drink that took the world by storm when Christopher Columbus brought it back to Spain with him in the 15th century. The drink was all that was known until 1847, when Joseph Fry learned to make it moldable with the addition of cocoa butter. It took just a matter of a few decades for chocolate to emerge into what we know it as today. Chocolate lovers around the world can thank Mr. Fry for all the goodies that are consumed daily, as he truly started the process. Once the process to make chocolate into a solid was discovered, the addition of different ingredients wasn't far behind. Knowing that the blend of sweet and salty was a desired taste, adding peanuts or other nuts into the mix was a no-brainer. Peanuts at this time were being grown and brought to market using steam power around the turn of the century. This led to a great number of people that could try this salty nut. It wasn't long before confectioners made the combination that is still sought after today. So have some peanut clusters today, because they are good, good, good. And chocolate, what can I say about chocolate? What can't I say about chocolate? It's its own food group. So enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Today is also World Kidney Day. So World Kidney Day was first celebrated in 2006, asking the question, are your kidneys okay? The idea was that there is a great need to educate the world about the importance of kidney health and reduce the impact of kidney disease and other health conditions associated with them. The goal that was established was to raise awareness of what our kidneys do and what can happen when they are not working properly. Across the world, celebrations take different forms, from free screenings to Zumba marathons. Celebrate by attending and learning more. Do you know what your personal risk is for chronic kidney disease? If not, use this reminder to make an appointment to see your physician and find out. According to worldkidneyday.org, there are 8 golden rules for kidney health. Keep regular control of your blood sugar. About 50% of people with diabetes will develop kidney damage. Make sure you are doing all you can to stay in control. Keep fit and active. Staying active helps in many areas to keep your kidneys healthy, as well as promotes positive mood and weight loss. Eat healthy. Eat healthy and keep your weight in check. Making sure food choices will go hand in hand with staying active to reduce weight and encourage good health. Drink water. Keeping hydrated is good for your skin as well as your kidneys. Staying hydrated flushes the toxins out of kidneys and reduces the chances of kidney stones. No smoking. Smoking is bad in many ways, but the kidneys' chance for developing cancer in them increases by 50%. for smokers, and stay away from over-the-counter medicine for chronic issues. Many over-the-counter medicines, such as ibuprofen, can harm your kidneys if taken regularly. It is okay to take for emergencies, but see a physician if you are having chronic pain for options that will not cause harm. You know, and with me, I love coconut water, and real coconut water has no calories. It goes down easy. It's absolutely hydrating. It's full of potassium, and then it is really special stuff, so get a hold of some coconut water and enjoy it on National Kidney Day. And then think about those kidneys, because all of our organs are important, and then they all have their own special function. We should eat for health and think about that. Today's also National Name Tag Day. So Name Tag Day began several years back when an onomatology hobbyist named Jerry Hill decided that names were just not getting as much recognition as they deserved, seeing as how much of a vital role they play in all of our lives, all day, every day. Hill's fascination with names, however, had actually started years earlier when he was just a child. In fact, Name Tag Day is not just a day, it's part of an entire week called Celebrate Your Name Week, CYNW, devoted to celebrating the names our parents gave us, be they beautiful, unusual, or original, and discovering more about their origins. So, put your name tag on today and learn people's names. When you meet somebody new, use their name at least 3 times in a few sentences, and you'll always remember their names. Today is also Popcorn Lovers Day. So today is for all those people who love popcorn. Many sources claim the day was started by a man named Bob Matthews from Rochester, New York. Bob's favorite snack is popcorn, and he and his wife have it on most Thursdays, explaining why Popcorn Lovers Day takes place on a Thursday. Bob is a gardener and grows and dries his own popcorn. Popcorn is one of 4 types of corn, the others being dent, flint, and sweet, and it is the only one of the 4 that can pop. Its hull is thicker, which allows steam pressure to build up inside before it explodes. When it bursts open, starch comes out, and as it cools, it turns into the shape we are familiar with. Popcorn is a whole grain food being made up of the germ, endosperm, and pericarp, which is the hull. It is low in fat and in calories, and are only about 31 calories in a cup of air pop popcorn with nothing on it. Of course, it is also high in fiber and very inexpensive. If you want an easy fiber fix or a nice treat, do that hot air popcorn, not microwave popcorn. Stay away from microwave popcorn, because the stuff they put in there is poison. 70% of popcorn is eaten at home. Of that, about 90% is purchased as unpopped kernels. Of the 30% eaten outside of the home, much of it is eaten in theaters, sports stadiums, and schools. The main states that produce popcorn are in the Midwest, and most of the popcorn eaten throughout the world is grown in the United States. Americans eat more popcorn than anyone else. About 13 billion quarts of popcorn are eaten annually, which is about 42 quarts per person. Popcorn has been used for thousands of years and was first used by Native Americans in both South and North America. The oldest popcorn that has been found is between 4,000 and 5,600 years ago and was discovered in a bat cave in West Central New Mexico in 1948. The Aztecs were using popcorn when Cortez invaded Mexico in 1519, not only for food, but to decorate their headdresses and statues of their gods. Kernels were also found in South American burial grounds in Chile. Some Native Americans believed that spirits lived inside popcorn kernels, grew angry when they were heated, and then escaped. Early colonists called popcorn parching corn, rice corn, and popped corn, and it wasn't known as popcorn until the 1820s. It became popular during the holidays, especially with children during Christmas, where besides being a snack, it was also hung on Christmas trees. Cracker Jack began being sold in 1896 and consisted of popcorn, peanuts, and molasses. It actually had been sold without the name at the Columbian Exposition in Chicago in 1893. it soon became a staple at baseball games. The mobile popcorn machine was also first introduced at the Columbian Exposition and became very popular with street vendors over the next half century who sold popcorn at fairs, parks, and expositions. In the late 19th century and early 20th centuries, popcorn was also eaten for breakfast, similar to how cereal is eaten today. So, have popcorn in all those various ways. I love things like popcorn balls and all that, but just a plain old hot air popcorn is nice. Cracker Jack's nice too. I'll tell you about Cracker Jack's though. What's the deal with a little prize in there now? It used to be like a cool little prize. You get a compass, a whistle, something like that. Now it's just like advertising. That's like a little thing or like a fake tattoo and there's advertising on it. So, you know, too much of that. Let's go back to the old ways. I like the old ways. Today is also National Oregon Day. So this day recognizes the 33rd state to join the Union. Also known as the Beaver State, Oregon's climate enjoys the warm Pacific air west of the Cascade Mountains and in the lush Willamette Valley. More extreme temperature ranges are experienced in Oregon's high desert. Populations of Nez Perce, Chinook and Malala and others settled along the Columbia River Gorge, Kalamath Basin, and points east. Many of the first European explorers to arrive sought the elusive Northwest Passage. The Corps of Discovery expedition followed the Columbia River Gorge, reaching the Pacific Ocean in November of 1805 when they would winter at Fort Clatsop. Soon, pioneers would follow along what would become the Oregon Trail. The gorge was created from volcanic lava flows and glacial floods. Windsurfers flocked to the Columbia due to the powerful steady winds off the Cascade Mountains. Kayaking, biking, hiking, skiing, and many other outdoor adventures can be found up and down the gorge, but its icy crown is Mount Hood. The stratovolcano's last eruption occurred in 1865 and was named after Lord Samuel Hood. South along the Cascade Range, a sleeping volcano forms the mysterious Crater Lake. A well-planned hike along the trails to the remote, brilliant blue waters of the deepest lake in the U.S. is worth the effort. The pristine volcano is a wonder to see. Eastern Oregon takes on the color of a sunset in the undulating painted hills near Mitchell. So what does all this mean? It means get out there and check out Oregon. You know, most people don't have a reason to go to Oregon. There's a lot of states you might have a reason to go. I got to go to New York. I got to go to Florida. I got to go to California. But Oregon's one of those states that nobody really has a reason to go to. So if you go there, you're going to check out Oregon and then check out all they have to offer in nature, the whole bit. It's a beautiful state, so visit and have a good time. This is Michael Engley on the Daily Update for Thursday, March 8, 2018, on United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Past Christiane.